Well, hello and welcome into the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harlan. This is your co-host, Brian Brown. And Mike, once again, we are ensconced in the beautiful and majestic.
And I've got to tell the listeners, they would not be able to know this because they obviously can't see us, but Brian is wearing the colors of his favorite football team today.
The blue and silver of the Dallas Cowboys.
The Dallas Cowboys. Yes. Now, you lived in Texas when you were a little boy.
I did.
So it was Roger Staubach.
Oh, yes. And Tony Dorsett, and Drew Pearson, and Preston Pearson, and Charlie Waters.
Yeah,
and,
back when they had a good team.
Wow. It's been 22 years since they won the Super Bowl.
Well, let me tell you about my family. My family is of that ilk. We were big Cowboy fans up until the time Jerry fired Tom.
Yes, I remember.
And when they hire him back is when we'll pull for him again, is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, they've got a statue outside, so they're doing their best.
All right.
And Ole Miss plays this year, too, as I understand. Do
they even have a football team down there?
Who knows?
Who knows?
But, Mike, today we're not here to talk about football season, which by the time this airs will be in full swing.
Yes.
Cowboys probably be undefeated, and the Ole Miss season will be over. But that's neither here nor there. We're here to talk today about something. You surprised me with this topic today when we came into the studio to record. You said you wanted to talk about the lose-lose.
Yeah.
Naturally, I wanted to talk about the win-win.
You want to talk about the win-win.
Right.
Everybody loves a win-win.
Right.
And, of course, when we are negotiating a relationship or any kind of thing, you'll hear people use that phrase a lot. We want a win-win where both parties are winning. I was in a conversation recently where I heard a church leader here at Lifeway talk about something that is happening in our churches, a trend that's happening in churches that I want to suggest to our listeners today, actually, far from being a win-win, this trend, in my point of view, which, of course, I highly regard, is a lose-lose.
And so you're talking about, a lot of our listeners may not be aware that Lifeway has a team of people, a field representative. Literally, they travel all the time,
all the time.
Every day they're on the road visiting churches.
Yeah.
And they will bring that feedback back.
They literally will visit tens of thousands of churches a year.
Right.
And what those guys do is they almost provide a concierge service, if you will, to churches that really, really go deeply in using Lifeway resources. And of course, they would love more and more churches to do that.
Sure.
So it's not an exclusive thing at all. It's just those churches that are using Lifeway material across the board in a very deep way, these guys give a personalized service to make sure they're being served comprehensively from Lifeway standpoint. Because of their visibility into many, many churches across the entire country of varying sizes,
Right. They
become aware of trends. Not scientifically, not because they've read a research thing, but because they talk to pastors and ministry leaders every day. And in a meeting recently, one of the leaders of this group cited a trend that I want to talk about today that I believe is a lose-lose. And here it is. The number of people going to Bible study and the number of people that are going to worship.
Right.
And there's always been some gap, but that gap seems to be widening, where there are the number discrepancy between how many people are in worship and how many people are in Bible study is getting wider and wider.
So far more people, I would guess, attending worship services than are involved in weekly Bible study.
Correct.
And then you found something else out about that, Mike, from this leader who's done this field research that was particular to certain age groups, right?
Exactly.
So this
here's the gap. Here's the trend they see. They see young families with children who are taking their children to Bible study, and then they are going to worship.
So they feel like the kids need what I called Sunday school back in Texas when I was rooting for Roger Staubach.
Yes.
Kids need the Sunday school, but adults, we can just go to worship.
Exactly.
And we'll be fine.
And to me, that's the lose-lose. So let's talk about who loses first. Well,
right.
Let's talk about the adults first, the parents. The adults that are not involved in a small group, are not involved in a Bible study, but are faithful attenders in worship, but that's all they go to in the church. I believe those folks are actually missing out on some of the most important aspects of their spiritual development. Not just from a content standpoint, but certainly from a constant content standpoint. You think about what a small group does. A small group would take a text, a section of scripture, and go into that text and study it in a little more deeper way than a pastor could ever preach it. Now, we know that there are a lot of preaching styles in church.
Right.
There are some pastors that go verse by verse and are teaching type pastors, and I believe those congregations are well served by pastors like that. But all pastors aren't that way. And many pastors will preach passages more topically. They might even be preaching through the book of Mark, but they're not doing an in-depth study of the verses of Mark. They're doing a topical Sunday by Sunday preaching through the book. That's very common. I would say maybe even more common than the other, where a pastor is actually going phrase by phrase and being very exegetical. In the small group study, a group of disciples that are growing together in their faith can build accountability and come to the scriptures together as a group with a gifted and qualified teacher, with a wonderful resource, perhaps one they've gotten here from Lifeway, like the Gospel Project or like Explore the Bible, or maybe even Bible Studies for Life, one of those curriculum lines which are widely heralded as the best you can find on biblical content. And these teachers and these groups come together and they get into the Word of God. And those individuals and those adults that are in a small group, every study that's ever looked at it will tell you that they will grow faster in their faith and that spiritual disciplines in their life will be more likely to be present if they're involved in a small group, not just from a content standpoint, but also the accountability.
Yeah, the accountability is the huge word.
It's huge because you're in relationship with people. And of course, now, admittedly, I've been a part of enough churches to know not every small group does this well. I mean, is there some dysfunction sometimes because a poor leader might be leading a particular group or whatever, many variables that people can have experiences that were less than what the church would hope they would be in their small groups. But the truth is this, that there are small group functions in the body of a growing disciple that cannot be replicated in the corporate worship experience, that enable someone to get into the Word, to build in relationships of accountability, and that first line of fellowship and relationship with other believers right there in those small groups. And so that family that says, hey, let's take our two kids and put them in Sunday school, and we're just going to go to the worship and then get them after Sunday school. The first lose are those parents because they are missing out on a core and critical part of their involvement in church.
Yeah, 2 Timothy 2:15, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth, the kind of hard work that you can't do passively, that you have to do actively.
Yeah, and you need to do it in community. I mean, the Bible is so clear about this. There's no such thing as a Lone Ranger Christian in the Scripture. You won't find it. The believers were to be together and not just for the purpose of worship. They were there praying and studying and equipping each other and holding each other in accountability.
So that's how the mom and dad lose.
That's the first loss.
When they skip the Bible study small group and go just to worship. So how do the kids lose? They're getting that.
Well, the kids are losing big time. And let me tell you why. They are getting Sunday school, which is an important, and Bible study, which is so important for kids to be involved in that. But I want to say something from my heart here. The most important discipleship group in every church is the family unit. Mm. What kids learn in the family is far more critical to the development of their spiritual health as they mature than anything they get at church. And it stands to reason. The church is going to have that child for about an hour a week, yeah. You know, and maybe only two Sundays a month in many cases, sadly. The family is with them every day. The relationship that is the most critical in the development of a child is the relationship they have with their own family, their brothers and sisters, their moms and dads. All right, take that into the worship context. If the kids are in Bible study and they're having all these great things happen in Bible study, and again, I'm not saying they shouldn't be in Bible study. They should be. Mm. But if the kids are never in worship with mom and dad, they are missing out on the most influential people in their life in this area of spiritual discipline of worship. They will learn more from mom and dad worshiping next to them or with them in worship than they will ever observe in the small group and that they will ever catch in a kids' worship experience. They will learn far more sitting on the pew with mom and dad than they could ever learn. Now that assumes that mom and dad are actively engaged in the worship themselves. And I would say, if we had titled this podcast "The Lose Lose Lose," maybe that third lose would be a mom and dad that their arms are folded and they're not engaged and they'd rather be on their social media while the pastor's preaching. That's awful. But I'm telling you, I want to tell you something, and I want to say this statement with all the passion, all the heart, all the conviction I have. If daddy sings, everybody in the family will sing.
That's good.
If daddy sings, he doesn't have to be a singer. He doesn't have to be a soloist. He doesn't have to be this. But I'm telling you, I cannot even describe it. But when I've stood on a platform, if I see a family sitting together, if daddy is singing, everybody in the family sings.
That's good.
And you know what? Yeah. If daddy doesn't sing, hardly anybody else will either. Now, sometimes mama sing, and maybe one of the kids starts singing a little bit. One of the kids more musically inclined than the other. That's hit or miss. But I want to tell you what, if mom and dad are in worship, engaged, Bible open, mouth open, worshiping, giving, praying, then that daughter, that son, those kids that are sitting right across the down the pew, or maybe even in some cases across the sanctuary, they are engaged too. I wrote it in a blog one time this way: sons follow fathers to the altar. They do. And I'll give you the specific story I use when I tell that story. I was leading worship one time at our church, and it was time for the prayer time. And in our church, we invite people to come to the altar during the prayer time if they want to. Not many come, but often several will. And I noticed this young father with three kids sitting by him on the pew next to him, and the prayer time had started, and I had invited people to come, and I saw that young dad just kind of slip out and start making his way down the aisle. He had three kids with him, and he wasn't five steps down the aisle to that next son had slipped right behind him, and then a couple of steps behind him, the next son down had slipped right behind him, and all three of them wind up at the altar together, and there's that father, and there's that son, and here's that younger son there at the altar together. And I remember when they were doing that, I made this note: sons follow fathers to the altar. The lose-lose is when those adults are sitting in a worship service and not involved in a small group Bible study where their spiritual growth is being hindered by their lack of participation in that kind of group. And the other loss is those kids who never share worship experiences with their parents and the family never worships together. That is a lose-lose, and we're weakening the very unit of our church that has to be the strongest in discipleship, and that is the family unit.
Such a great point, Mike. I think one of the greatest tragedies in society today is how much time young people spend with other young people,
yes,
and how little time they spend with the older generation. And now when we're not in school anymore till 15, 16, but we're in school anymore till 25, 26.
Exactly.
And if they miss those opportunities to, at those formative ages, even through the teenage years of watching mom and dad worship, I think about kids who only see their parents in traffic, or perhaps when the kid is performing in some sporting event, and I don't know, the parents I see, their behavior is not always the most holy in those settings.
Well,
so to
find a
setting where they can see their mom and dad at their best, as well as all those others where maybe they see them at their worst.
I have to put my personal experience in here, and
sure,
I realize every family is different. But let me tell you about my family. My dad sang bass. My mom was an alto. They were both in the choir. I was sitting with choir parents, you know, with folks that were volunteered for me to sit with them. When I'm 4 and 5 and 6 years old, I'm in worship and I'm looking up. So it's not always just sitting next to mom and dad.
Right.
But it's watching mom and dad actively engaged. So I'm looking up in the choir loft and there's my mom and there's my dad. And then in those services when the choir wasn't singing, maybe Sunday night, I'm on the pew next to them and the hymn is being called out. And I mean, it wasn't a matter of whether or not I was going to be involved or not. It was just a matter of whether or not I was going to join them and how involved I was going to be, because mom and dad are up and singing and participating. And when the plate passed, something went in from their hands. When the pastor prayed, they prayed. When it was time to sing, they sang and they were listening. And you know what? There's no question that I can't measure today the impact that had on me as a young person learning how to worship. Because here's the truth. Any child education specialist would tell you, children learn, especially the younger they are, they learn by imitation.
Right.
Remember those little lawnmowers that
the bubble mower.
Yeah, the bubble mower. All right, so when my son's 2 years old and I'm mowing the yard, Lee is behind me in one of those little bubble mowers pushing right behind me. And children learn by imitation. They do. Yeah. And if they are never in worship with their mom and dad, how are they going to learn worship? And if the only time they ever worship is with other children, who are they imitating? They're imitating each other.
Right.
So I can't stress it enough. It's a lose-lose when families allow the Bible study and worship gap to exist inside their own family, and they never in Bible study, and they're never in worship together.
And I tell you, Mike, I was thinking as you were talking, the collective corporate worship and the influence that the entire body has on kids. Because like you, I was a preacher's kid, and my mom often was involved in the choir. They were up on the platform and almost expected to be professional worshipers. What often moved me as a kid is seeing my friend's dad, who was a plumber, and his dad, who was an electrician, and my other friend's dad, who was a lawyer, and watching them become broken in a worship service just amazed me, because they weren't, the pastor or the music leader. They weren't people who had any reason to put on a display of worship in the worship service sometimes, man, boy, pastors can't let their emotions, they've got to be in that mode all the time, and they're very conscious of how that other people are looking at them. Watching just the other guy in the pew, the effect of the corporate body on the kids in worship is huge.
That's a great point, and I think back to on those years, and I can think of those other adults that influenced
your best friend's dad.
Exactly, and all of that comes into play. And I think there's another aspect of this that we've kind of stumbled near, and that is this whole idea of multi-generational worship. Where the generations, many of our churches, for a lot of good reasons, have had kids over here worshiping, and the students are over there worshiping, and the young adults go to the contemporary service, and the senior adults go to the, and the generations are never together in worship. And if you don't cross-pollinate the generations in your church, they won't do it naturally.
Right.
They won't gravitate toward each other. But if you put them together, they can learn so much. The senior adults learn from the young adults. The young adults learn, are influenced by the senior adults. We do the same thing in our discipleship ministries. We actually organize. I read a blog this week by somebody that I respect greatly, and I wanted to hit reply and comment on his blog. He was defending this idea of discipleship by dividing classes up by life stage, where similarly aged people study the Bible together.
Right.
I see some of the wisdom of that. It certainly is wise to do that from a fellowship standpoint, common experiences, common life stage. But from a discipleship standpoint, I challenge whether or not that's the best thing. Because when you put the generations together, if you've got a 60-year-old in studying the Bible with a 35-year-old, and that 35-year-old loses his job, that 60-year-old can say, you know what, when I was your age, the same thing happened to me, and here's what God did in my life. I mean, the generations can really help each other, and it doesn't just go that way either. The younger generations can look up to that senior group and help them understand life as it is being lived now, and help them find some of the advantages that current technologies or that new approaches are to families. Subjects that senior adults might be intimidated with, and a young adult could come along and help them navigate through some of those kinds of changes. So this whole idea of families going to church, park their kids in Bible study or Sunday school, and go to worship and then pick them up. You know what that is, Brian, in my book? That's a lose-lose. I think both of them are losing, and I sure hope families will rethink doing it that way.
Mike, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking about really the microcosm, the church as compared to the larger society. And our society seems to becoming more and more segmented in every single way. Even people of like age groups with like life experiences are trying to find those things they can disagree about and further segment themselves. What a beautiful picture if the church could become even more an image of how we can come together and bring together the most different groups in every way different.
Love it.
But we come together around the throne.
Well, because we know that the only unity that can be found is only found in Jesus. And it won't be found in a life stage or similar interest or even Dallas Cowboy fans. I mean, it's going to be found when people grow close to their relationship with the Lord, and they do that in community with each other. And the love, Jesus said it. He said, they will know you're mine by how you love each other. And I don't think he was talking about just a single generation when he said that. I think he was talking about all of the generations.
Every generation, every tribe, every tongue. And that's the beautiful picture of the kingdom that we can show to an increasingly divided world. What a great word, Mike. Well, we want to thank you guys for listening in today, the Worship Life podcast with Mike Harland. I hope the topic of lose-lose has caused you to think a little bit. If you've got families in your church and you see that pattern developing, as a minister, do what you can to step in and arrest that. Make sure your people are aware of what their kids are missing by missing corporate worship and what the adults are missing by missing that Bible study time. If you see that trend happening in your church, let us know of ways that you are addressing it. And you can email us, worship@lifeway.com, or comment on the podcast, and just let us know things ideas maybe that you come up with on how you can address that trend in your own local congregation.
Brian, let me add here, you mentioned inviting people to write in. Yeah. We got an email this week from a guy that had listened to our podcast this week. And the subject we happened to be talking about was one that he was living right then. And he told me in an email, he said, your podcast was like getting a phone call from a counselor helping me navigate something I was dealing with, because the topic was specifically where he is. And I can't tell you what that does. I mean, as soon as I get an email like that, I walk next door to Brian's office and say, Brian, this guy was helped. I mean, it means so much to us to know that something is being said, and at least questions are being asked that can help us navigate and help people out there navigate. So we really do cherish your emails, your comments. Love it when you share our podcast with other people. We're just very grateful that we get to speak to you at all about some of these subjects.
Absolutely. And so thank you for listening in again. Let us know how we can pray for your church. We love to do that here at Lifeway Worship. And for now, for Mike Harland and the Worship Life podcast, this is Brian Brown saying we'll be back to talk to you again about worship really soon.